Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Hey, good morning, Portland, Oregon, the Great Northwest. We have another outstanding day. The sun is shining. It is beautiful. And in studio with me is Carl Jepson with the Warren Island Law Firm.
Good morning, Chuck. And isn't it a perfect day for people to sit back and relax and call us with their questions about estate planning and financial matters and even taxation?
Actually, this is a great day to pick up that phone and give us a call and ask us a question, because you can look outside and see a beautiful day and hopefully get some answers of something that's been on your mind for some time. And remember, there's no foolish question when it comes to your money or your estate plan. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree totally.
Well, listen, if you want to give us a call, pick up the phone, 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. And for all you listeners out there that are listening to us on podcast at freedom970.com, and again, all of our shows are always on iTunes, and you can go on my website at PFGWM and listen to previous shows as well. You can also call us toll-free, 800-990-0750. And you know, Carl, I've been contacted this past week by some people that are in Ashland, and they actually picked up our show in Ashland on Saturday morning, and they emailed a question into me. So,
well, that's amazing. My daughter lives in Medford, so I'll have to tell her that she can get it. Of course, I don't think she's going to make the 8 o'clock thing. So,
well, that is a problem for some. That is a problem. And the one thing I do want to mention is our show is actually live, and that's why we have the phone line, so you can call in and ask a question. This is not Memorex, and it's not a recording. It's live, so pick up the phone, give us a call. And in the last couple of shows, we've had a problem with phones, and I just want you to know that the lines are open up now. You can give us a call. We can answer that question. And I'm going to talk a little bit here about the stock market, and I kind of want to talk about the reality of investing, and I also want to talk about sometimes you may hear an ad on the radio that is a little bit deceiving, maybe not telling you the, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. So, you know, as a consumer out there, when you meet with a financial advisor or an attorney or a CPA or whoever, or anytime you're buying, if you're buying a car or anything, you always want to check the facts out. You always want to ask questions, because remember, it's your money. It's your life. You need to make those decisions, and you need to get as many facts as you can. And if you're dealing with somebody and they have a problem answering your questions because you're asking too many, then you need to use your feet and walk the other way. Because if they can't answer your question or they don't want to, there's a reason. There's probably a really good reason. So don't hesitate to ask that question. And hey, pick up the phone and ask us the question. If they won't answer it, we will. We'll answer it for you.
You know, we should give that disclaimer, though, that we give our answers based on what we hear on the radio, and it's designed for general purposes only and for educational purposes. It's not specific legal or financial advice, but it can give you a pathway. It can give you a compass, if you will, instead of a map, and at least send you to your own professional to implement whatever kind of information we've given you. But at least that way you'll have some answer to bring to your professional. professional to say, this is what I heard on the radio and this is what I'd like to do. What do you think?
Yeah, and we obviously couldn't do a total financial plan on the radio or an estate plan on the radio because there's too many differentials that would pertain to you personally. But a general question we have no problem in answering. It's just that as long as you understand to get the specifics or your situation, you would need to meet with your own attorney or your own financial planner or to meet with Carl or me. And that, or if it's a tax question, to meet with Kevin or another CPA. But, you know, the thing is, my whole point is there's no foolish question when it comes to your money and your estate plan or your taxes. You need to find out and you need to know. But I'm going to give a quick stock report here, and I'm going to talk about what people say, because the question I had, and I just heard an ad when I came in about another financial show that I was listening to, and the guy said that you can invest this money with no risk on your money and a reasonable rate of return. So the question is, reasonable rate of return. And I'm going to give you a scenario, and you, the listening audience, you'd have to make up your own decision. But I'm going to give you two scenarios. One of them is a product that none of these guys never talk about until you get in their office and you sign the papers. It's called an annuity, a fixed indexed annuity. Number one, if somebody tells you it's an investment, it is not an investment by law. It is not an investment, and if they tell you it's an investment, they are being deceiving to you. It is not the truth. Index annuity is designed to pay out income to you, lifetime income. You accumulate your money on a tax-free basis with a reasonable rate of return. Well, if reasonable is 3.5% to 4% to you, then yes, that's a reasonable rate of return. And I say that a little facetiously because if you compare that to investing, it really doesn't stack up. And here's the thing I would say to you. And these other guys, they always talk about low fees. Well, you can buy this index annuity and you have no fees. Yeah, you have no fees, but like I said, you're going to have a 3.5% to 4.5% return. And if we go back to the turn of the century, and let's say you bought one of these index annuities with no fees, and it returned to you 4.5%. Let's say 5%. I'm going to be really generous. Let's say it did 5% over 14 years. No fees, you made 5% net. On the other hand, there was an investment that you could invest in that had a little bit of fluctuation. The market went up and down, and maybe you had two losing years over 14 years, and you paid a 2.75% fee. That's what your fee was. But over that period of time, your investment returned a net return of 8% over and above, including getting your 2.75 back. So what investment would you really want to have over a 14-year period? Now, let me just recap. The one with no risk, never have a losing year, reasonable rate of return, 5% return, just simple interest over 14 years, you made 70% interest on your investment. And again, index annuity is not an investment. That's why I kind of hedged that, because it's just a return on your money. The other investment is a real investment. It fluctuates, goes up and down maybe as much as 4 or 5% in any given year. But over the 14 years, actually returned 8% a year. Now, 8% times 14 years would be 112%. Now, would you have been happy making 70% because you never paid any fees, or would you rather make 112% and have paid a fee?
You know, this draws us right to the real fundamental distinction of what's your risk tolerance and what's your purpose in doing this. And if you can, you know, if it's money that you absolutely cannot afford to lose, then the first option sounds pretty good. If you're trying to grow, though, and you can't afford the possibility that it goes down some, then the second option sounds better. And I would guess that most people, if they had some money they could afford to lose and some money they couldn't, they'd, you know, pick both.
Yeah, and that's my whole point. We recommend a balance of both, but here's the difference, Carl. In our office, we have about 20% in the fixed one, and about 80% of our clients have their serious investment money, which is usually the majority of your money when you retire. It's got to produce something for you. We have that in a true investment portfolio. And a true investment portfolio is totally different than a reasonable rate of return. And my point is, when somebody tells you reasonable rate of return, you need to say, okay, show me what you did in various market conditions. Show me what the return was when the market crashed. Show me what you did when the market went up. I want to see how you performed in good and bad times. You know, and the thing is, you need to ask those questions, because if you don't ask and you just buy, that's not a good thing. And any investment you ever buy, if it's an investment, you should know what is the purpose of that investment for your overall financial plan or your estate plan. What is the purpose of it? And how long are you tied up in it? Now, the two examples I gave you there, too, the investment that did the 8% net was always 100% liquid. The other investment was tied up for 10 years. It's meaning if you had to get your principal, you couldn't get it. So that changes the picture a little bit too, doesn't it, Carl?
It does.
Yeah.
Because I think you can get it, but it's a costly get.
costly get. So I'm just saying, if somebody's recommending something to you, I got a book out called Investing Simplified, and if you haven't got a copy, you need to go on Amazon and get a copy or come by and see me. But you need to get a copy, because I point out some questions there that you need to ask your advisor. And if you're sitting down with an advisor and they're giving you some recommendations, the first thing I would ask to them is, what percentage of investments do you recommend this annuity product? And of your sales, what percent is that of your sales? And if they're saying they're 80 to 90%, they're really not helping people invest. They're just putting them in a CD, basically, that's not going to pay a high return. The word reasonable rate of return means totally different to every single person. And you need to say in your own mind, are you agreeable to making 3 or 4% a year? Maybe once in a while make 5. And you'd be very happy with that. And some people would. I mean, some people, and there's people we meet and we tell them, look, you should never buy an investment. If you have no tolerance for fluctuating portfolios, if you could not stand to see your portfolio go down 1 or 2% or 5%, I'll tell you what, a conservative portfolio would drive you crazy. But if you bought an equity-based in stocks, I'm telling you, 4 to 5% could be a daily fluctuation. Our market went down this week. The S&P went down on Friday 1.42%. That's more than our conservative portfolios. Some of our conservative portfolios went down in the whole year of 2014. So if you're an investor and you're actually buying an investment and you can't stand fluctuation, you need to have somebody sit down with you and show you. And one of the things I do with clients is I meet with them. I talk to them about the upside and the downside of the investment they're in, and I actually show it to them. And we've done this on the show. You can call in, and I'll tell you about the fluctuation of your fund. By the way, I did want to mention, we had a very nice lady call, I think it was last week, where she asked about Franklin, Oregon tax-free. And I had mentioned to her that if you're buying that investment to take the interest income tax-free, double tax-free, and you're in a 28% bracket, it's a great fund. But I did also run today, I ran the schematics on that thing, and I've got it on my screen. And that portfolio, from a pure standpoint, if you're taking the dividend, fine. But do not watch the principal movement. It does move very radically up and down, and it can fluctuate by anywhere from 2 to 12% in any given time period, which means you could look at it one day and the next day you could be down 12 to 14%. But if you're buying that investment for the income, then you really shouldn't be looking at the fluctuation of the principal. You should be cashing those checks and enjoying the tax-free income because that's what you bought it for. So, again, remember, when you buy an investment, there should be a purpose for that investment where it meets your financial plan or your investment plan or your retirement income plan. If there's not a purpose for buying it, you shouldn't be buying it. Okay, just real quickly here, the S&P closed at 2,071.26. This is why I asked about a reasonable rate of return. The S&P index you could buy all by yourself for 20 basis points, cheapest investment you could buy. That S&P over the last 7 years and 5 months, which is when the market took that big dip, is up 4.36%. The S&P since the turn of the century, since 12/31/99, is up 2.89%. I got to tell you, that's less than 3%. In the previous 80 years, that index did about a little over 10%. A little bit of different. And if we look at the Dow Jones, the numbers really are not a whole lot better. Because the Dow Jones, which is supposed to be the 30 top stocks, by the way, this past week, in case you lived in a cave or didn't listen to any financial news, AT&T got replaced on the Dow Jones by a little teeny company, actually one of the largest in the world, Apple. So you ought to look at indexes with a grain of salt, too, because they do from time to time change the companies in there. And one of the big things I can remember about the Dow Jones is it's usually the 30 biggest stocks in America, and they usually represent about 70 to 75% of the net worth of the entire stock market. So we're talking the big of the bigs. The Dow Jones closed at 17,856. It was down 1.54% in one day, Friday. The Dow Jones now closed it on 10/9/07 at 14,164. So over that 7 years and 5 months, it was up 3.51%. Now, if we go back to 12/31/99, the Dow Jones closed at 11,497.12, and so it did 3.9% per year. And I got to tell you, I've had a couple people email me after the show telling me that I'm not using fair dates, but I think any reasonable person would say if you're going back and you're doing the values from the turn of the century, that's a pretty good date to start any investment if you look back and say, okay, what have we done for the last decade or what have we done for the since the turn of the century? And those are real numbers. And I've had people challenge me and I send them the numbers and say, you know, if you tell me I'm wrong with my math, please show me because I do the math every week. And those are the numbers. Well, listen, you're listening to Investing Simplified. If you get a chance, pick up the phone, give us a call, 503-417-7626, or toll free, 800-990-0750. Pick up that phone, give us a call. We're going to come right back with Carl's comments.
Price Financial Group. The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com.
How often do you have a checkup? Annually? Only when you're not feeling your best? Or are you one who waits until there is an emergency condition? High blood pressure, rapid pulse, or sleepless nights could be the result of your investment portfolio or no estate plan. But there is a specialist ready to offer you a checkup on your financial health.
Hey, Gene, Dr. Price. Hey, Gene, Dr. Price.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor and author of Investing Simplified, is offering you a free financial checkup. Whether you're asking for a second opinion, a complete financial physical, or investment stress test, Chuck Price, the financial doctor, can help diagnose your money ailments and prescribe a prudent path towards healthy investments and peace of mind. Call 503-253-3000 to schedule your financial checkup or on the web at pfgwm.com. That's pfgwm.com. You'll feel better.
Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepsen.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. It's time for Carl's comments, and that's when I like to discuss something that sort of comes to my mind during the last week or so to maybe give you some information that might be helpful or practical for you. And this week I want to talk about the do's and don'ts of estate planning document management. And this is, you know, a lot of times people get their estate planning done, and they have all these documents sitting around. They're usually a handful of them anyway, depending on what they've had done. And then they have to do something with them. And so I want to kind of talk about maybe how's the best way to handle these things once you have your estate plan done. And the first thing is you need to keep your original documents in a safe place. That's a do. And a safe place usually means something where it's safe from fire and theft for the most part. So if you have a safe or something like that, or a fireproof kind of box, that's a probably good place. Or oftentimes people put it in a safe deposit box. So that's an important kind of do. So do find a safe place for your documents. And I'm talking about the originals primarily because they're the most important documents. The copies are nice, but the originals are very important in most cases. And that's the number one do. The number one don't is don't store them in the garage or the trunk of your car or your golf bag. Make sure that you can put them in some place, or where your Labrador Retriever
or
can eat them.
Or in that catch-all drawer in your house.
Yeah, or where the Labrador Retriever can't eat them. That's the big number one don't. So it sounds like we may have a call on the line.
Yeah, we've got a call here from Bob. Bob, are you there? You're from Washington County. You got a question about a college savings plan.
Yes. Good morning. I enjoy your program and look forward to it every Saturday.
Well, thank you.
We have for our grandchildren, we have a Oregon College Savings Program. And I read something this week, I think it was on Clark Howard, that said grandparents are doing a disservice to grandchildren because if they have the OCS for the grandchild, it hurts the grandchild when they want to get loans for college, and that instead they should give the money to the grandchild and have them open it in their own name. But I thought that was not possible because I thought you had to be 18 to open an account, and so I'm confused, and I thought I'd find out what you had to say.
Well, I didn't happen to hear Clark Howard's program. We don't have our CPA here on the tax qualification, but I can tell you that one of the things that I think is going to change a lot over the next, 4 to 10 years is going to be college funding, because it is one of the most increasing costs you have to face. I particularly like the college plan the way you're doing it as a grandparent. It's a great way we can put money into a plan that grows tax sheltered, and the kids can use it for academics between the ages of 18 and 30. So I still like that plan. I'm not sure what Clark's talking about, but I usually agree with Clark Howard on about 90% of the stuff he says. But
yeah, this was just something I read on his site. It was just a little teaser type blurb, and I didn't look into it, and it didn't make a lot of sense to me, but I'm not a professional either, so.
Yeah, I think what you're doing is the right way to do it, because although I particularly don't care for the Oregon plan, the Oregon plan to me is too limited. There are many, many more investment options out there that you can do that I think are much better. The advantage of the Oregon plan is you can write off up to $2,000 for doing it and contributing to it. And what I tell my clients is I have them contribute to that to get the max write-off and then take the majority of the money they're doing and put into another type plan, another type 529 plan, maybe one that gives them a lot broader investment options. I don't like the limits. And some states do this. Now, Washington has their own college program, which I think is far superior to Oregon's. But again, you're in Oregon, so you got to go do what Oregon does. I would use the Oregon for your write-off, but then the excess dollars, I would talk to either your financial advisor or somebody that you know, or you can give me a call and I can give you some recommendations or some other options to put the majority of the money in, because there are a lot better plans than the mutual fund portfolios that the state recommends.
I agree with you. You know, I was thinking exactly the same way as you. I don't care a heck of a lot for the options on the Oregon plan, but married finally joining this for 2014, we were able to deduct $4,530 off of our taxes, and that's the only reason that we did the Oregon plan.
Yeah, and I tell people, take that write off, do the Oregon plan. But your other serious money you're going to put in on top of that, shop around. There are a lot better plans. You're doing the right thing.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you. Great call, Bob. Thank you.
Thanks.
That's a great question there. That question comes up a lot. And I'm glad Bob called and asked about it.
Yeah, it's always good to know that stuff, especially for those who are, you know, if you've got little kids and you're wondering what it's going to be like when they go to college, better start, you know, counting your checkbook out of there, because it's an expensive process.
Well, you know, with all the horror stories of kids graduating with large amount of college loans, and you've got this young child being born or is at a small age, that's the time to start planning to pay that college with the most reasonable dollars you can. And they're long-term dollars, because the longer the dollars are in, hopefully they're going to grow. So the earlier you start, the better. And the less potential loans you'd have down the road. So I think it's a great idea, and I think what he's doing is a great idea.
Absolutely. Well, we were talking about the do's and don'ts of estate plan document management. And number one, we said keep them in a safe place. And number two, we said don't store them in the trunk of your car. And number three, actually, another thing that we would about storage is make sure that your personal representative or your trustee or your agent and your attorney, power of attorney, know where you store your papers, your original papers, because they may need them. And then another so do tell them where they are. And then a corollary to that is make sure that they have access to it. So if you store them in your safe deposit box, you should sign them up on your safe deposit box, because if they're trustworthy enough to manage your trust or to be your power of attorney or to be your personal representative, they should be trustworthy enough to have access to your safe deposit box. If they're not, then you might want to reconsider whether you should have them as their trustee. So anyway, that's another do. And so you've got to tell them where they are, provide them some access, and then I suggest that you review your original estate plan documents at least annually, not necessarily with a lawyer, but at least go over them. Because one of the things people often forget is that sometimes maybe there's a death in the family and that person turns out to be your trustee or your personal representative. Or it may be that you have an heir, a devisee, a beneficiary who dies, or maybe someone has some life circumstances that make you want to change, you know, the way that you give the money to them, or maybe whether or not you give it to them at all. So those are things to do. And a lot of times when those events come up, you don't think in terms of estate planning. But if you have an annual review where you just take the documents out and you look at them and you say, oh, wait a minute, I've got to change this, that's a good idea. And periodically, maybe every 3 years or so, you should review them with your lawyer. So that's another review. Now I want to do some don'ts. One of the don'ts is when you're doing that review, when you're doing your annual review, make sure that your coffee cup or your soda bottle is at least 5 feet away. That's enough said. Number two, number three, do not write on the originals. Please do not write on the originals. And, you know, it's possible that sometimes you can make your own amendments to documents, but writing on them isn't the best way to do it. And if you do, you can sometimes create some very unfortunate unanticipated consequences or unexpected results. So don't do that. If you're going to write on stuff, I'm fine with writing notes on your copies. That's great. Do that. And as a corollary, another don't is don't commingle or mix your originals with your copies. Keep them in separate places because we find a lot of times that people have notebooks that have, you know, a binder kind of thing. And they're perfectly set up at one point in time, and then later on they start shuffling things around, and they put a they put more stuff in it, and they take out something. Pretty soon you got some originals and some not originals and some copies, and sometimes the pages, you know, sometimes people take out pages and never put them back in the right place. That could be really messy because sometimes it affects how you perceive the document. So it's very important to keep them together. And then again, don't write on them. That's not a good thing. Another don't, finally, is don't try to amend them yourself. That's really a difficult thing. It's a simple thing. Call your lawyer and tell him you want to do an amendment. And the lawyer can tell you whether it's a really easy amendment or whether it's a difficult amendment. But if you're amending a trust or a will, you have to do it in the right formalities, and the language that you use makes a difference, or can make a big difference. So those are really important things. Know where they are, you know, protect them, be in a safe place. Your fiduciary should have access and knowledge of where they are. And when you want to review them, you know, if you want to change them, have your lawyer look at it first. It's a lot cheaper to fix a well-done estate plan and add something to it or subtract something from it or change it a little bit than it is to draft the whole thing. But on the other hand, it's really, really hard to fix something that somebody screwed up because they thought they could do it themselves. So anyway, that's my comments for the day.
Yeah, and believe me, we could tell you some horror stories about people that tried to do it themselves.
You know, and I understand that. You know, there are forms on the internet, and some of them are pretty good. But it's kind of like, you know, learning how to do stuff. Anybody ever know how to learn how to swim from a book? You know, it just doesn't work out that way sometimes. And, you know, or being able to replace the transmission in your car because you got the owner's manual. Nah, probably not.
Yeah, so, probably not.
No.
So, well, listen, we're going to be right back because this weekend it's just Carl and I. So we're going to come back with the Knowledge Trust for the next half hour of the show. And listen, if you've got a question, something that's keeping you up at night, you want to call and ask us about, pick up the phone, 503-417-7626, or toll-free 800-990-0750, and we'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Do Investing Simplified. Hi, everybody. Chuck Price, the financial doctor here. If you're between ages 58 and 68, choosing Social Security benefits at the right time is one of the biggest financial decisions you'll ever make. You get one chance to get it right. After 12 months, there are no do-overs. 74% of Americans receive reduced benefits. Get your free report on 44 Social Security secrets at pfgwm.com. Social Security is often one of the largest and most mismanaged assets in your retirement income plan. Claiming benefits sounds easy. So is leaving up to $250,000 of your money with the government, or reducing your benefits up to 76% over your life expectancy. For this vital information, go online to pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
We do Investing Simplified.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
My name is Money.
Well, you're back to Investing Simplified, and money is the name of the game if you're investing, because you want to create money as much as you can. But, you know, Carl, one of the things you and I do that a lot of advisors, in all honesty, talk about doing and some attorneys talk about doing, but in reality they don't, and that's called estate planning. And I thought it might be a good time for you and I to maybe kind of talk about the estate planning process a little bit.
Sure.
And about some of the things that we do in our basic estate planning. And one of the things I always talk to my clients about, a couple of things that's very important and really has nothing to do with the investment side of it, but has everything to do with the estate planning and the settlement of your estate. Because if you're not investing to leave that money to your heirs, then you're investing to just have that income last as long as you last, and then it doesn't matter after that. But most people have heirs, and they want to make sure that whatever they have left goes on the most reasonable basis to their heirs, and as much as possible to their heirs. Not always is the dollar amount a big thing to people, but they want to make sure that it's simple and their heirs don't have to go through a big hassle to get the estate settled. And one of the reasons I've enjoyed working with Carl is because Carl sets up living trust and sets up durable power of attorneys and healthcare directives and makes sure that clients we send to him are taken care of whatever might happen. And that's an important thing.
Well, I appreciate that, Chuck. We try to, you know, look at everybody as an individual, and they have their own needs and their own goals. So, but we also have a call.
Well, we're going to get the note here. Yeah, we've got Carol from Lake Oswego has a question about wills.
Yeah, Carol. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, Carol. Hey, thanks for calling.
Yeah. I was always curious, at what point do you know that you've accumulated enough assets to go from a will, a simple will, to a trust document?
Well, that's a great question. And quite frankly, the answer is it doesn't. They're just a different way of doing the same thing. I wouldn't say that doing a trust is necessarily tied into the size of your estate, really. Really has to do that there are two primary differences between a will and a trust. Number one, a will can't be used during your lifetime to assist if you become incapacitated. So, in other words, if someone needs to step in and manage your financial affairs, they can't do that with just a will. They have to have something else. And then, but the most important thing is that the living trust avoids, you know, will cause the your heirs to be able to administer your estate without having to go through the probate process. So
right.
that's the primary difference. I would say that there are some things that make it much more likely to be important to have a trust. One in particular is if you have a lot of or some real estate that's in different states, that's almost a mandatory, because otherwise then you have two probates. So that's really it. It's not really the size of the estate. It's more the goal. And the primary goal usually is to make it as simple and quick and economical for your heirs to administer your estate after you're gone.
But we do want to point out, Carol, when you say about the size, but however, if you're in Oregon and you have over a $2 million estate, a living trust, by setting it up properly and avoiding some estate taxes is very important, wouldn't you say, Carl?
Well, yeah, and it does that too. I mean, you can do that in a will, but if you do it in a will, you're going to have the probate too. So you get the advantage there, and there are certain things that minimizes inheritance tax by making sure that each married person in the couple have used their exemption amount, which in Oregon is $1 million apiece. So.
Okay, so I was just thinking about, you know, these young people coming along, maybe one of our children, and the fact that one lives out of state, but he has a residence here, but he doesn't have a lot of assets. But he would be a candidate for a trust because of that issue of having living in a different state than when he owns his property.
Absolutely. And the nice thing is that it makes it so much easier to distribute the estate later on. We've had an experience with just kind of the opposite, where we had a person who had real property in Oregon and Washington and California. And so we ended up doing three probates. And that was a mess. But
I bet it was.
Yeah, well, it was costly, and it was very time consuming, and coordinating the three different states. You know, we had to get lawyers in California, we didn't have to do lawyers in Washington because I was a Washington lawyer, but we had Oregon and Washington, and it took a lot longer and was more expensive than it should have been. So.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. I just have one really other quick question.
Sure.
Do attorneys, are they a good source to restore store original documents?
No. It used to be that they used to do that, but some still do. The problem is that our society, everybody moves around a lot, and it may be that the lawyers move around sometimes. I think it's a real good idea for you. I always recommend to my clients that they store them themselves, either in a safe deposit box or a safe or something. And I just don't think it's a good idea to leave it with the lawyers, not because they're going to do anything with it. It's just that I can tell you, for example, I know that there was somebody that here just a while ago, we did a probate, and we thought that there was a will. But we couldn't find it, and I sent out an email to every lawyer in the area, hundreds of them, to see if there was a will, and nobody responded. If there was a will, it ended up, you know, that was being stored by some lawyer. It never got found and never got used. So it ended up with probably some different distributions than was intended. I don't think that's a good idea.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You bet.
Thanks, Carol. Good questions.
Yeah.
We've got a caller, Mike, on the line from Beaverton. Mike, you got a question about reverse mortgages?
Yes, I do. I do. First, I enjoy your show. I look forward to it every Saturday.
Thank you.
Good work, guys. So I see the commercials on TV, everybody from Henry Winkler to Fred Thompson for reverse mortgages, and I don't know any more about them than what I've heard in those commercials. But if I believe you, Chuck, and Harry Dent, and deflation is coming, and real estate will be a sinking asset. Might a reverse mortgage be a good way to short sell an asset that you think is going to go down?
Well, I've never thought about it on that basis. So you're bringing up a point, Mike, that I've not really thought about, because I'm not a big reverse mortgage person. Very few of my clients would be candidates for reverse mortgages, because of the assets they have accumulated. And I think a reverse mortgage, to me, and the usage I've seen it, the only time I've referred a client, I had a client whose husband passed away, and the wife, the only way she could stay in the house that they built, the house they lived in together for 50 years, was to do a reverse mortgage. And I referred her to somebody that I know and I trust that works in that area, because that's not an area I work in. In fact, in my book, Investing Simplified, I have a chapter there written by somebody that I know that I've used, referred people to do a reverse mortgage. And I think reverse mortgages can be a train wreck, or they can be a blessing. And I think the key is you got to look at your financial situation. But I would have a little... I would have a little apprehension using it as a financial planning tool, the way you're talking about it. I think it could backfire.
Not a hedge against deflation.
I don't see how that's going to work, because eventually, granted, you can stay in the home as long as you want, depending on how much. But if you really look at the numbers that these banks are actually lending on the principal. You have to have a lot of equity in there to get a reverse mortgage. And when you're giving that asset away, and granted, you're not making the payments anymore in the house, and you've got this cash to use, I'm not sure of the ramifications. Certainly down the road, if that were the case, you wouldn't have any equity, and if you died, they're gonna get your house, but it's gonna be worth substantially less. So the bank who did the reverse mortgage is gonna get short-sighted on that. So I don't see it as a financial planning tool the way you're talking about it. And you'd have to talk to somebody who specializes in reverse mortgages, because it's just not a tool that I use a lot.
No, just a crazy idea of a way to set a price while it's high, get paid that price, and then not have to suffer the down of it. But anyway, thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Mike. You know, that's one of the great things about having a call-in show. We get guys like Mike who come up with an idea, and who knows? I'm going to talk to my reverse mortgage guy about that and see what he thinks about. But I have a tough time thinking about doing that. I always think about making money, not trying to do it that way. So
yeah, the reverse
different.
Mortgage tends to be has, like you said, it can be a blessing, I think, in the situation that allows somebody to stay in their house when they might otherwise not be able to do it, because the rest of their assets just simply don't allow them to do that, to pay the taxes or whatever they're going to do, or the upkeep or mortgage or whatever. But it also, I've seen situations where, for example, they do that, and then because they're thinking, well, okay, we're going to stay in our house for a long time, and the next thing you know, one or both of them get really sick, and they have to move out into some other kind of living arrangement, and now they've got, if they've spent the money, or if they they have to figure out, what do I do with this money, and what am I going to do? So do I leave the one spouse in the house and let her live there, or do I move one spouse out and pay for his care, or what do you do?
It can be a mess. So. And Carl, one of the things I think that maybe we're a little bit different than a lot of other financial planning firms is that we encourage our clients to pay off their house. We encourage our clients not to borrow against the equity in their house and invest it. I think you're playing a fool's game if you're borrowing money to invest. I just don't like that. I don't want to pay money to invest money. If you've got money to invest, that's one thing. But if you're borrowing the money from the equity in your home, I think a disaster is coming. And I just don't think that's a smart thing to do. So just a warning out there to you. If somebody's telling you, let's take a loan against your mortgage and invest that money, no, don't do that. Pay off that mortgage. I'm more in the area of reduce debts, pay off mortgages, and don't have any liabilities. And then when these bad periods come with the market, you have the cash available to take advantage of dips in the market. Mm-hmm. And I kind of look at the opposite maybe of Mike, and I'd be thinking about how to accumulate cash. So if I was a real estate person and I wanted to buy real estate, I'd be thinking about accumulating cash right now. So when this market does take a dip and real estate takes that dip down again, you have the cash available to take advantage of a dip in the market. Always remember, buy low, sell high.
You know, this is first of all kinds of coming back to one of our first topics, which was sort of the risk tolerance situation. And I think that the risk tolerance is, a lot of times if you absolutely have to have the money to stay in your house and you really, really want to do it, and all things suggest that that's a good idea, that might be one of those situations where the reverse mortgage works. But in most other situations, it's more of a hindrance, I think. And I think a lot of times people who have made a lot of money or have acquired a lot of property, and maybe they're using them as rental properties, that can work really, really well sometimes in real estate, but it also can be really challenging. We had an estate a while ago where the fellow had acquired five or six rental properties and was renting them out, but he refinanced all of them. They were all heavily leveraged. Well, of course, in 2008, most of them were very close to underwater by the time he died. And he had other assets, tons of assets, but what he had done is he had given all of his liquid assets to others with a beneficiary designation or transfer on death designation, and he had all of these properties that have all of these assets, we have to pay inheritance tax on those assets that went to the beneficiaries, and the equity, I guess you might say, on the real property. But the problem was his particular will provided that all of the inheritance taxes had to be paid first out of the probate estate. Well, the problem with that is all of his probate assets were underwater for the most part. Now, we were fortunate enough to be able to sell enough properties and make enough money just barely to pay the inheritance tax, but it ended up, and then the rest of the probate estate was supposed to go to charity. Well, that all went well. So, quite frankly, the beneficiaries got away, you know, like bandits, and didn't have to pay any tax, and all of the tax had to be paid out of the share that was going to go to the charities, and it just seemed like a wrong thing. And so that was one of those kind of unexpected consequences of the way that everything was done. But, you know, it was partly because of the leveraged houses, and it was partly because of the way the estate plan was done.
Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and discuss a couple of estate planning techniques we've used throughout the years. And I can tell you we'll have examples of how it's worked out for people. But give us a call at 503-417-7626 or toll-free 800-990-0750 for those of you listening on the web. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com. 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
If I had $1 million. Well, let's talk about $1 million. If you have $1 million estate in Oregon, you get the distinct privilege of paying an Oregon estate tax on any assets over and above $1 million when you pass away.
Actually, your heirs get to pay that tax.
Your heirs, you don't got to pay. Your heirs pay it. This is something else, too, that we're going to kind of talk about a few little estate planning things. But, you know, Carl, one of the things, you know, we've had clients who have created a lot of net worth with real estate. And a lot of people are really great at managing their own personal real estate portfolios, where they may have 20, 30 rentals and they take care of them and everything. But one of the things you really have to ask yourself, and you have to look in the mirror and you have to say, at some point in your life, when you're 85 or 90 years old, are you going to want to be going around collecting payments? Are you going to be wanting to fix that toilet at 3 o'clock in the morning? Are you going to be wanting to do all these things the landlord has to do? And another very important question you have to ask is one of your kids going to be as diligent as you are at doing the same thing you did? Now, I find most families, the kids aren't always adept at doing the same thing the dad or the mom was. They tend to go their own way.
And they don't want to,
yeah. And so one of the reasons why we think it's so important to do estate planning, and in this case, if you had a lot of rentals, you better have some trust set up. And you better have a trust set up, and you better have some kind of a program set up to handle all those real estate properties. Because at some point, your kids would inherit them. They may just want to liquidate them.
And that may not be the best time to do that necessarily.
That's correct. But that's where some planning comes in. And you have to be, one of the things about doing estate planning is you have to look in the mirror and you have to say, what's good for me may not be good for my heirs. Well, and you also, have to be honest with yourself.
Yeah, and also, if you have real estate, and real estate's a great, it can be a great investment. If you have a lot of it, and you die, well, and you're over the $1 million, and you got to pay inheritance tax. Do you have the liquidity to pay that inheritance tax? And if you do, what's left over for the kids in terms of cash? If you do, fine, great. That's a good thing. And if the kids want to keep the rentals and do it, they can do that. But if they don't have the cash to pay the taxes, or they don't want to deal with the real estate, then probably they're going to liquidate it, and then they're going to have some taxes to pay, but they may not just want to do that. So
yeah, that's one of the reasons why I tell people you've got to look at each of the assets. You've got to calculate out the real rate of return your heirs are going to get when you pass away, if they liquidate that asset. Not what you think it might be, but what the real rate of return is going to be, and that's going to depend on the market of what they can maybe get out of it. But not always are kids going to want to manage properties if you manage properties. And that's one of the things you need to be honest with yourself. And you know, Carl, one of the simplest things that we do in estate planning is a very simple concept, and it has to do with trust. It's called an irrevocable life insurance trust, and it's called an islet. Mm-hmm. And it's a way to get, now most people don't realize this, life insurance proceeds are always income tax free, but they are not always estate tax free. And sometimes having a big life insurance policy can push your estate into a higher tax bracket.
Absolutely.
And so one of the great tools of using life insurance in an estate plan is to do the irrevocable life insurance trust, where you take a life insurance policy, you put it into a irrevocable life insurance trust, get it out of your estate, and it goes tax-free to your heirs, and it's estate tax-free. It's a very simple, great tool, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it also allows your heirs to have that money. If your estate exceeds the amount that gets taxed anyway, then they have liquidity to pay that tax from insurance proceeds that weren't taxed.
Yeah, and you're usually paying for that liquidity for pennies on the dollar,
yeah,
which makes a lot of sense. Well, listen, you're listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be back next Saturday. I'm going to have a special guest on the show. We're going to talk about if you're a homeowner, or your own real estate, you want to listen to our show next week. We're going to be talking about it, and it's going to be something you're not going to want to miss. So tune in next week to Investing Simplified on the air or on the web at freedom970.com. Thank you very much. We'll be back next week.
Financial Group.